That it will come to order. Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Roll call for Friday, February 19th. Anderson?
Here.
Bebout?
Here.
Burns?
Here.
Case?
Here.
Coe?
Here.
Cooper?
Here.
Dockstader?
Here.
Elliott?
Here.
Esquivel?
Here.
Geis?
Here.
Hastert?
Here.
Honeycutt?
Here.
Jennings?
Here.
Johnson?
Here.
Landon?
Here.
Larson?
Here.
Martin?
Here.
Massey?
Here.
Meyer?
Here.
Meyer-S?
Here.
Nicholas?
Here.
Perkins?
Here. Here.
Peterson?
Here.
Ross?
Here.
Schiffer?
Here.
Scott?
Here.
Sessions? Townsend?
Here.
Von Flatern?
Here.
President Hines?
Here.
30 present.
Prayer by Reverend Bite.
I'd like to offer you today an excerpt from a prayer attributed to St. Francis, a man who had good words, was passionate about what he did, things appropriate for the Synod, but you may have heard the legend that the only ones that listened to him were the animals. So maybe, I don't know, they're still good words. So let us pray. Lord, make us instruments of your peace. Where there is hatred, let us sow love. Where there is injury, pardon. Discord, union. Where there is doubt, faith. Despair, hope. Where there is darkness, light. Sadness, joy. Grant that we may not so much seek to be consoled as to console, to be understood as to understand, and to be loved as to love. For it is in your name we pray. Amen.
Please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands. One nation, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Will the reading clerk please read the Journal Committee report?
Mr. President, your Journal Committee reports at the Journal of February the 18th, 2010, has been read and recommends that it be approved. Senator Dockstader, Chairman.
Are there any objections? There being none, the report is adopted. Today, for Doctor of the Day, we have Dr. Peter Hanna, MD, from here in Cheyenne. And our nurse today is Cindy Wood from Platt County Memorial Hospital. Thought for the day, patience is the ability to keep your motor idling when you feel like stripping the gears. Also on this day in history, in 1887, the last stage, the Black Hills stage, left Cheyenne.
It's still out there somewhere.
Amanda, would you come up to the mic over here on this other side? A resolution to recognize Amanda Johnson's service as a page in the Wyoming State Senate. Be it resolved by the Senate of the 60th Legislature of the State of Wyoming, whereas Amanda has served as a page for the Senate from February 8th through February 19th, 2010, whereas Amanda's service as a page has been exceptional and fully appreciated by the Wyoming senators, whereas this resolution has the support of the members of the Senate of the Wyoming Legislature, who have signed their name here too. Now, therefore, be it resolved by the undersigned member of the Senate of the Legislature of the State of Wyoming that Amanda has served the Senate of the State of Wyoming with dignity and respect, and Amanda's dedication will serve her well in her future endeavors. Therefore, with great appreciation, we recognize Amanda Johnson for outstanding service, dedication, and support to the State of Wyoming on this ninth day of February, 2010. Here's a little pin for your recognition.
Thank you.
Thank you. And you may have the mic.
Thank you.
Nice. Thank you very much, Amanda. Reports from standing committees.
February the 19th, 2010. Mr. President, your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, to whom was referred House Bill 32, engrossed, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. I, Senators Hastert, Honeycutt, Landon, Schiffer, and Scott, Senator Scott, Chairman. February the 19th, 2010, Mr. President, your committee number 5, Agricultural, State and Public Lands and Water Resources, to whom was referred House Bill 2, engrossed, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. I, Senators Bebout, Elliott, Geis, Jennings, and Johnson, Senator Geis, Chairman. Mr. President, your February the 19th, 2010, your committee number 5, Agricultural, State and Public Lands and Water Resources, to whom was referred House Bill 46, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. I, Senators Bebout, Elliott, Geis, Jennings, and Johnson, Senator Geis, Chairman.
Bills on second reading. We have some House bills on first reading first. House Bill 71, first reading of the bill.
House Bill 71, sponsored by Representative Dan Zwanitzer, Workers' Compensation's Appeal, and Act Relating to Workers' Compensation. Pass the House on third reading, ayes 57, noes 1, excuse 2.
House Bill 71 have been referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. House Bill 19, first reading of the bill.
House Bill 19, sponsored by Representative Bagby, Mandatory Saving Accounts for Inmates, and Act Relating to Department of Corrections Inmates. Pass the House on third reading. Ayes 57, noes 1, excuse 2.
House Bill 19 has been referred to Committee Number 3, Revenue. House Bill 29, first reading of the bill.
House Bill 29, sponsored by the Revenue Committee, Taxation of Specified Digital Products, an Act Relating to Excise Taxes. Pass the House on third reading. Ayes 50, noes 8, excuse 2.
House Bill 29 has been assigned to Committee Number 3, Revenue. House Bill 101.
House Bill Number 101, sponsored by Representative Rodney Anderson, Electricity Generated from Wind Taxation, and Acts Relating to Taxation and Revenue. Pass the House on third reading. Ayes 40, noes 18, excuse 2.
House Bill 101 has been assigned to Committee Number 3, Revenue. House Joint Resolution Number 8, first reading of the bill.
House Joint Resolution 8, sponsored by Representative Davidson, opposition to Northern Rocky Ecosystem Protection Act, and Joint Resolution requesting Congress to oppose House Resolution 980. Pass the House on third reading, ayes 52, no 6, excused 2.
House Joint Resolution number 8 had been assigned to Committee number 6.
Travel.
Bills on second reading. Senate File 13, second reading of the bill.
Senate File 13, sponsored by the Agriculture Committee, Economic Analysis.
We have an amendment. Would the reading clerk please read in the amendment?
Senate File 13, second reading amendment number 1 to corrected copy. Delete the first Senate Standing Committee amendment.
Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 13. And Mr. President, you said the corrected copy?
Corrected copy, yes.
Does everybody have the corrected copy, Mr. President? Because I don't. Okay. Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, the other day we had some very good discussion and debate on Senate File 13 economic analysis. We talked about the need. We talked about where it would be beneficial to the counties in this great state, how it would help them in dealing with the input that they may be able to provide to federal agencies relative to the impact their decisions would have on our federal and state lands in those areas where they play such a huge part. Mr. President, what I've come to you with this amendment is to try to be more specific and bring language that I think makes this a better bill and accomplishes what the Ag Committee heard in testimony all last summer relative to this issue. And we've done several things, Mr. President, in this amendment, and we've taken out, for one thing, the reference to private lands. There was never any intent we would have somebody from government asking us information or demanding information from any of us what we do or don't do with our private lands relative to the economics of those lands. The other thing we did, Mr. President, with this amendment is we specifically, if you look at item number 8, we went in and said we shall use a nationally recognized model. And I mentioned a model in our debate here a couple of days ago that had been mentioned to us by the Economic Analysis Division that would work. We want to be more specific about that. The language we have in number 7 and number 9 is language that's already in existing statutes as to what the Division of Economic Analysis does in the meaning of collecting, compiling, analyzing, and distributing data. So we're trying to give them the same kind of information that they've been provided by statute before and operate under. Mr. President, what I did do, and I had a good suggestion from a colleague in here that had some concerns with this bill, he may still have those. I went to a different area in government to ask them how they felt about possibly pursuing this in the business community, in the business side of it, and had a long meeting with them and then talked again to the Division of Economic Analysis. Mr. President, at least from my perspective, this is the best place to put it. And the one of the things that I was so concerned about is that we do not want a government agency, whether it would be the business council or somebody, getting data that would conflict with their mission. Here we're talking about the Division of Economic Analysis just providing data as we're trying to very specifically ask them to do, so counties, when they deal with the federal government and the cooperating agency meetings, have that data available to them. And, Mr. President, that's what this amendment does. I think, in my opinion, makes it a better bill. We've narrowed it. We focused it. We're still trying to get to be able to provide assistance to those counties in those decision-making processes. I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Discussion on the amendment. Question being, so second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 13 pass. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Amendment passed. Senate File 13 haven't been read. Oh, excuse me. There is a second amendment, and reading clerk, please read it in.
Senate File 13, Second Reading Amendment Number 2, page 2, lines 5.
Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. President. This amendment simply, Mr. President, fellow senators, just to extend the 3 years to 5, this study to be compiled and given to the county commissioners. Simple reason being is that the 5 years better coincides with the release of industry census reports, where a lot of this information is garnered from. And the concern that I had was 3 years comes awful quick, and the expense of that. This is going to be an effective report to the commissioners to utilize, as mentioned before, and 5 years just fits better, I think, saves money in the long run, and would keep that report updated enough for these county commissions to utilize and to use effectively. So I'd urge your support of this amendment.
Senator Bebout.
President, just one thing that I think you should be concerned about, and I appreciate my colleague from Bighorn County, and he's participated in this, and he has a lot more experience than I do. Things change quickly in economics. You know, you can look where the state was a year ago relative to the employments and the unemployment rates and where they are today. I'm not so sure that maybe we should do it every 1 or 2 years, but I would rather leave it at 3 years just because of how things change so quickly in the economic factors of our state and how we lag behind and the influence of commodity prices. It may be that we want that data every 3 years, or, like I said, Mr. President, maybe even more than that. So I reluctantly would oppose this amendment.
Senator Peterson, you need to move the amendment, please.
I'm sorry, Mr. President. I'd move up. Got to find it. Second reading amendment number 2 to Senate File 13.
Further discussion on the amendment? The question is, shall second reading amendment number 2 to Senate File 13 pass? All in favor say aye. Those opposed, no.
No.
Amendment have failed. Senate File 13 having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a 3rd time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Senate File 15, second reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 15, sponsored by the Mental Health Committee, Title 25 revisions.
There is an amendment. Would you read in the amendment, please? Oh, no, excuse me. I'm on the wrong one.
No, it's on.
Senate File 15, having been read 2 separate times. The question is, shall the bill be read a 3rd time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. Senate File 25, second reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 25, sponsored by the Judiciary Committee, liens.
There is an amendment.
Senate File 25, second reading amendment number 1 to substitute bill number 1, page 3, line 4.
Senator Meyer. Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. President. On Senate File 25, there's a couple things we're working to try and bring some more unanimity and clear up this bill a little bit so it can come out of here with more support and I think a stronger voice out of the Senate. If no one objects, I would move that we lay it back until Monday.
Without objection, Senate File 25 will be laid back.
Can we do that?
Senate File 48, second reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 48, sponsored by Senator Johnson, licensure of midwives.
Senate File 48, having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a 3rd time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. Senate File 52, second reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 52, sponsored by Senator Cole, reduce cigarette ignition propensity.
There is an amendment. Would you clerk read in the amendment, please?
Senate File 52, second reading amendment number 1, page 13, line 15.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 52 and ask for the body's favorable consideration. Mr. President, this just does really one thing primarily. It strips out the special account that was earmarked for fire prevention and safety and drops the fees into the general fund so it can go through the regular appropriation part. Penalties stay the same as it was in the regular bill. They just go to the schools as the first bill. And so basically, Mr. President, that's all it does. It's just puts money into the general fund.
Senator Cole.
Well, Mr. President, I think the amendment's okay. If they want it in the general fund to be reappropriated, that's fine. The special account was set up to be able to use those funds to specifically go out and target, safety factors, education of what's going on here. If they want it in the general fund, that's fine.
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and on in support of the amendment, folks. It's a better accountability to put it in the general fund and require people to appropriate out and measure the need against all other expenditures in state government. This idea that we set up a tax and then you put it in your own special account so you don't have to justify it as an obligation equal to everybody else's expenditures, it's really not an appropriate way to do it in my mind. I think that the money goes in the general fund. Everybody has to come shoulder to shoulder to justify their expenditures. We would all like to have our own special revenue account and draw the money out. Yeah, that's right. And it's just not good practice. If we're going to raise the taxes, put the taxes in the general fund, and then the expenditures are justified later. Thank you.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, the discussion of taxes raises another question. Are the fees here sufficiently related to the actual cost that we're going to incur with this so that we're not in the process of raising general revenue and not afoul of the provision that revenue-raising bills have to originate in the House?
Senator Cole.
Well, Mr. President, the fee structure on here could raise up to $250,000 based on the $250 fee. More than sufficient to cover the appropriation that has to take place, which I think is about $28,000 a year. So the answer is yes, the fees are sufficient. Does the bill have to originate in the House? That's for a different day.
Senator Larson.
Well, Mr. Chairman, that question kind of came up in committee, whether the fees are a little higher than is necessary to do that. But one of the things in support of that is until they get up and get the program up and running and going, they're not really certain of what the fee or what the costs are going to be, and it was thought to be an offset. It's something, and then it's been adjusted. Well, I guess it hasn't. There was a bill to adjust it downward, and that may still be appropriate. But it's a fee for a service to protect the state, and I would doubt it would come under a tax raising scrutiny.
Question is, shall second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 52 pass? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Amendment has passed. Senate File 52 haven't been read 2 separate times. The question is, shall the bill be read a 3rd time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. Senate File 53, second reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 53, sponsored by the Management Council, Obsolete Laws, General Revisions.
Senate File 53, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time, hearing no objections? It is so ordered. Senate File 54, second reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 54, sponsored by the Management Council, confirmation of appointments.
Senate File 54, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time, hearing no objections? It is so ordered. Senate File 59, second reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 59, sponsored by Senator Dockstader, Workers' Compensation Firefighters.
Senate File 59, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time, hearing no objections? It is so ordered. Senate File 61, second reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 61, sponsored by Senator Scott, Health Insurance Reform 2.
There is an amendment. Are you reading an amendment?
Senate File 61, second reading amendment number 1, page 24, after line 3.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, I move adoption of this amendment. Mr. President, this amendment's not as extensive as it looks. What it does is it goes in and redoes a piece of the Standing Committee amendment, which, as you recall from yesterday, allows the program under some restrictions to accept federal funds if they should be available. What this does is goes in and redoes that piece so it reads federal funds and then the new language, or private funds. I'm aware of at least one private foundation that has expressed some interest in this program, and if there might be funds available there, we ought to be able to accept them legally. That's all this amendment does. Be happy to answer any questions.
Question yourselves. Second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 61 pass. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, no. Amendment pass. Senate File 61, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. Senate File 65, second reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 65, sponsored by Senator Perkins, termination of parental rights.
Senate File 65, and having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. Senate File 66, second reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 66, sponsored by Senator Perkins, industrial siding amendments.
Senate File 66, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. We have a special guest this morning to address us. After 24 years of service to the people of Wyoming as a physician and community leader, John Barrasso was sworn into the United States Senate on June 25, 2007. In the United States Senate, he served on the Energy and Natural Resource Committee, the Environment and Public Works Committee, the Indian Affairs Committee, and the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. Senator Barrasso was elected to the Wyoming State Senate in 2002 and was reelected in 2006. During his tenure in the Wyoming legislature, he served as chairman of the Transportation, Highway, and Military Affairs Committee. He was also a member of the Labor, Health, and Social Service Committee and the Mineral, Business, and Economic Development Committee. Barrasso is known as Wyoming Doctor for his work as the Medical Director of Wyoming Health Affairs and for his television and radio reports and newspaper column providing Wyoming residents with important health information. Please join me in welcoming home United States Senator John Barrasso.
Thank you.
Well, what a treat to be back here. Thank you very much, Mr. President, for the kind invitation. It's like I never left, but I see Bill Landon did clean up his desk for today. Thank you. In case you were worried that I wouldn't know exactly what's been going on here, I was here last Friday night for the Governor's Arts Award dinner, and Saturday morning, Kit Jennings gave me a ride to Casper, so he filled me in on everything. It is, it's been great. I've been traveling around the state in a lot of your communities. Many of you remember the swarm of emails we got about the Cowley School a couple of years ago, which is in Ray's district. I was there talking to those kids the other day. Terrific kids, terrific school, traveling around the state. I was in Worland at, I was in Worland the other day and was at the singing your praises to the Rotary Club as well as at Maggie's in the morning where, you know, walked in there and people had all the answers. So if ever you need help, Maggie's in the morning in Worland, they got all the answers. And, it is really great to be back home. Bobby sends her best. You know, we have a daughter who is 17 and in high school, a junior, and we need to make sure that at least one of us is at home every night. So you know how that goes. It's always terrific to be out of Washington and home in Wyoming. And just last week, you heard about the big snowstorm that was there, basically shut down the city for the week. On Wednesday, the whole place was shut down. I mean, completely. They told the plow drivers to stay home. The restaurants were closed. All of the businesses were closed. Everything was closed, except for one door in the Senate office building, kind of the 24-hour the security door, so people could get in and out. I got in early as usual. There were only 15 people through that door that day. They were all from Wyoming. Every one of them. They were students from Hannah, Elk Mountain, Rollins Gym, and I mean, they were your kids. They were tough. You know, they had hooded sweatshirts. They didn't even think anything of it. They were great. We took them on a tour of the Capitol, the Rotunda. They got to see the whole thing, and that's kind of the Wyoming way of doing it, because the Wyoming office was still open, even though the city was shut down. It's been great to be back here, traveling around the state. I also got to travel and visit the troops last month. Visited 700 of our men and women who were serving in Iraq as well as in Kuwait and in Afghanistan. And I bring them from you our greetings, our best wishes, to let them know how much we respect and appreciate and are grateful for what they're doing to keep us free. And I traveled with John McCain. And no matter where we went, John McCain would introduce me, because you know the world leaders all know John McCain, and he would introduce me as the senator from Wyoming, and then he'd say, one of the most beautiful states in the country. And it is true. And it made me think about the fact that under the stewardship of the Wyoming legislature, we have done it right with multiple use. We have protected our environment, and we have developed our resources. And day after day, we still produce 10% of the energy that this nation makes. And as a result of that, we've been so blessed so that when I go and talk to the students at Rollins, the first grade students, or the students at LCCC in Laramie yesterday, Mike, or Dan, when I was just last week in your home community, as I travel around and talk to student groups, I talk about what the legislature has done in a very bipartisan way with the Hathaway scholarships. And when I was at, you talk to these students and say, have you ever heard about the Hathaway scholarships? And not many of the first graders heard about it, but every high school kid heard about it. And all the students at LCCC in the economics class have heard about it. And they realize that how blessed we are in Wyoming to have the mineral resources, to have the most beautiful state in the country, and to use them well, as this legislature has done. And it was because we put it in play Wyoming vision, Wyoming values, and kept to that. And I would encourage you to continue to do that. It is interesting traveling around because kids asked the darndest questions. And one of the, a young woman at Lyman High School, and is that Saunders, is that your district? Lyman High School? Oh, okay. Oh, that's Stan's. I'm sorry, Stan. Yeah, and so it was, in Lyman High School, one of the students said, they asked a lot of questions, said, if you could change one law in Washington, what would it be? I'd say, that's really easy. I would make sure Washington lived under the same rules as Wyoming. Balance our budget. Live within our means. Governor has a line item veto.
germane amendments, single topic on a single bill. If we could do that, we'd be in much better shape as a nation than we are right now. So there's a lot Washington can learn from Wyoming. You know, I think Mike is going to talk about, because Mike is speaking in the House now, Mike Enzi, and he's going to come over here, and then I'm going to go there. I assume he's going to talk a lot about health care. He's the ranking member of the Health Committee. The President has called for a summit next Thursday. Mike has a 10-step plan that I think is much better than this monstrous bill that is very large, in some ways contradictory, and has so many unintended consequences that that it's hard to believe. And you know, that's one of the things that I've learned about by you teaching me is when I was a member of the state Senate here, the unintended consequences of legislation. So that's why I'm so grateful for Charlie Scott when I served on his health committee, the labor committee. And also I admire what you're doing with the study bill that you're working on right now. So thank you for that. I spend a lot of time on the energy committee and then the environment committee. And, you know, I think about this, and I think about energy, the environment, and then the economy, and what we need to do. And that's why I've been so opposed to this cap and trade or cap and tax bill that you hear about. Because from an energy standpoint, we need energy security, and I think it hurts that. From an environment standpoint, I think we want to have environmental progress, make progress in a positive direction. I think from what they're trying to do globally, it does very little. But then from an economic standpoint, where we want economic growth, I think it ties our hands as a nation, and it cripples us economically. So I'm going to continue to fight against that. As you know, and I talk to so many of you, Washington is spending too much, borrowing too much, and additionally, it's just government is too big, too many things that they're taking over. The governor in his state of the state message made a statement about government rules and government regulations and government control, thinking they're in charge of everything. And even when they don't pass laws or we can stop bad things from becoming law, it's regulations coming out of Washington that are getting in our way. And we're seeing it with the Endangered Species Act. You know, you see it with the Environmental Protection Agency and what they're trying to do with carbon dioxide and limiting our businesses and trying to use that as a club to make Congress pass a bill into law that so many members don't approve of. So it's these regulations, and we're seeing it with the Clean Water Restoration Act, trying to take care over all of water. I mean, it just seems they want to be in charge of the air we breathe and the land that we live on and the water we drink and everything in a way that is not what we would want here. Well, I could go on and on. You have a lot of business to attend to. It's just really a privilege to be back here. I know you have the Leadership Wyoming students here. It's a program that I went through, and there's many people on the floor here went through that program. And Eli and I were in the same class of Leadership Wyoming. It was Jane Mockler, who used to be here, was in that same class. So it's been a great experience to serve in the Wyoming State Senate, and it's a great privilege to serve in the U.S. Senate to represent all of you. For those of you, any way that I can help, I want to be helpful. Anything our offices can do or I can do, please let me know. I still keep the same email address that I had in the state Senate. I pay for it, of course, myself right now. But I continue to occasionally get lobbied on Senate files or House bills because they use the old list. And every night, the Wyoming Education Association sends me their daily legislative update. So I know exactly what you are up against. But anyway, we can help. We want to help. If you're in Washington or you're coming, let us know. We have this, Mike Enzi and I do a thing called Wyoming Wednesday. It's in his office every Wednesday morning for an hour. Anybody who is from Wyoming, who is in Washington, we want to see. Donuts and coffee and just a nice time for people from Wyoming to get together. So I invite you to come. Come call ahead. Make sure we get to spend some time together. Love to see all of you. Anyway, we can be helpful. We want to help. You know, Mike and I continue to work very closely together along with Cynthia. We think that the delegation works closely together in the best interests of Wyoming. We work in a bipartisan way with the governor, conference calls with him. And any way we can help, I know John Hastert, you still have my cell phone number. This is the one that my wife has, my kids have, and John Hastert has. And, yeah, Kit, I know you have it too, because Kit continues to text me on a regular basis. Anyway, It's a privilege to be with you. You look at the economics of the nation right now. We are a strong and resilient nation. We're an optimistic people here in Wyoming, and the future always will be better. It will continue to be that way. We're so blessed to live in this country and to live in Wyoming. Thanks so much for letting me be back to visit with you all today. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Senator Barrasso, for joining us and speaking to us this morning. We wish you continued success in Washington. Bills on third reading and final passage. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, do we have a consent list?
Yes, Mr. President, we do have a consent list. Third reading for today, Senate File 2, Appropriations for the Legislature. Senate File 7, Rangeland Health Assessments. Senate File 27, Government Competition. Senate File 34, Post-Secondary Education Options Program. Senate File 57, Telephone Solicitation Cell Phones. Senate File 74, Subdivisions Parcels. Senate File 75, School District Health Insurance 2. And finally, Mr. President, Senate File 78, Illegal Fish Stocking.
Would anyone like any of these bills removed from the consent list? Having been read three separate times, the question is, shall these bills pass the Senate? Senate File 2, Senate File 7, Senate File 27, Senate File 34, Senate File 39, Senate File 57, Senate File 74, Senate File 75, and Senate File 78. Will the Chief Clerk please call the roll?
Anderson.
Aye.
Bebout.
Aye.
Burns.
Aye.
Case.
Aye.
Coe.
Aye.
Cooper.
Aye.
Dockstader.
Aye.
Elliott.
Aye.
Esquibel.
Aye.
Geis.
Aye.
Hastert.
Aye.
Honeycutt.
Aye.
Jennings.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Landon,
aye.
Larson,
aye.
Martin,
aye.
Massey,
aye.
Meyer,
aye.
Meyer-S,
aye.
Nicholas,
aye.
Perkins,
aye.
Peterson,
aye.
Ross,
aye.
Schiffer,
aye.
Scott,
aye.
Sessions,
aye.
Townsend,
aye.
Bonflatern,
aye.
President Hines.
Aye.
On the consent list, 30 ayes. Senate File 2, are there any changes? Case, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 2, 29 ayes, 1 no. Senate File 7, are there any changes? Case, aye to no. Larson, aye to no. Perkins, aye to no. Dockstader, aye to no. Nicholas, aye to no. Burns, aye to no. Ross, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 7. 23 ayes, 7 noes. Senate File 27. Are there any changes? Closing vote. Perkins, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 27. 29 ayes, 1 no. Senate File 34. Are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 34. 30 ayes. Senate File 39. Are there any changes? Burns, aye to no. Bebout, aye to no. Scott, aye to no. Schiffer, aye to no. Larson, aye to no. Perkins, aye to no. Dockstader, aye to no. Case, aye to no. Landon, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 39. 21 ayes, 9 noes. Senate File 57. Are there any changes? Geis, aye to no. Johnson, aye to no. Case, aye to no. Perkins, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 57. 26 ayes, 4 noes. Senate File 74. Are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 74, 30 ayes. Senate File 75, are there any changes? Case, aye to no. Scott, aye to no. Bebout, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 75, 27 ayes, 3 noes. Senate File 78, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 78, 30 ayes.
Having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Senate, Senate File 2, Senate File 7, Senate File 27, Senate File 34, Senate File 39, Senate File 57, Senate File 74, Senate File 75, and Senate File 78 have passed the Senate. Senator Hastert.
May I have privilege of the floor?
You may.
Member of the Senate, Senator Brasso mentioned his attendance in Leadership Wyoming, and in that class was Senator Bebout and myself, and that was the first class of Leadership Wyoming. Since then, they've had classes every year with 40 people through Wyoming, and it's been a great opportunity, and I really enjoyed it myself. Well, joining us today up in the balcony behind us here is this year's class of Leadership Wyoming. I think some of them are here, and it might be all of them, but anyway, I'd like you to welcome the class of Leadership Wyoming to the Wyoming Senate.
Welcome to the Senate. It's nice to see everyone here today. Senate File 50, third reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 50, sponsored by Senator Scott, Hospital Privileges, an act relating to hospital privileges for health care providers, be it enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
There is an amendment. Will this reading clerk please read in the amendment?
Senate File 50, third reading amendment number 2, page 2, line 11.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I would move third reading amendment number 2 to Senate File 50 and ask for a favorable consideration. Mr. President, when I looked at this bill, it seemed like it was a little too restrictive and prescriptive to the hospital boards as to who they could hire and why. So what we did is we got with the sponsor of the bill and loosened it up considerably and gave a lot more flexibility to the hospital boards. First of all, on page 2, line 11, we wanted to make sure that that was defined better, so we said for licensed professions enumerated in this section, there's a little confusion on that. Then we went into page 2, line 12. This is the area that said the admission staff shall not be denied based upon type of degree. We put some added flexibility in there and said based solely upon the types of degree of the applicant. Then, Mr. President, we went in and we further clarified that and said that in determining whether to grant privileges, that we added some flexibility. The governing body now can consider competency and character, and we're able to do that in the past. We also added in some economic issues as far as any increase in the net costs or liability to the hospital or the patients associated with the privileges that may be granted. It was thought in that particular instance, Mr. President, that if you have some of these people who previously had not been able to have privileges at hospitals, and it drove up their medical malpractice insurance or drove up their costs, that they could consider that in the granting of those privileges. So we've made it a little less prescriptive, a little more subjective as far as what the hospital boards can rely upon to grant privileges. And I think it makes it a better bill. It still has the nurse practitioners being able to be have privileges, but under a lot more flexibility as far as whether or not the hospitals have to hire them or grant them privileges. Thank you, Mr. President.
Discussion on the amendment? Question is, amendment number 2, to the third reading of Senate File 50. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. That amendment has passed. We'll interrupt this bill. We have a special guest to speak to us. This is an individual I know quite well. But after he roasted me the other night, they said I had to read the script. Since being elected to the United States Senate as Wyoming 20th United States Senator in 1997, Mike Inzi have cast votes and worked on some of the most pivotal and historic issues of our time. At the start of the 109th Senate in 2005, Inzi became only the 9th Wyoming Senator to ascend to the rank of chairman of one of the standing Senate committees. He is currently serving on the Budget Committee, Finance Committee, Health, Education, Labor, and Pension Committees, and Small Business and Entrepreneurship Committee. Senator Inzi grew up in Thermopolis in Sheridan and has a long record of public service to the people of Wyoming. He's elected as mayor of Gillette and then went on to serve in the Wyoming House of Representatives from 1987 to 1990 and the Wyoming Senate from 1991 to 1996. Mr. Enzi also served in the Wyoming Air National Guard from 1967 to 1963. It is my pleasure and honor to welcome United States Senator.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. It's always good to be back among longtime friends. I used to call them old friends, but now some of my friends object to that. But it was a pleasure to serve here. Got to sit where Phil Nicholas is sitting now and enjoyed the process here. And it's always so much fun to come and see a Senate where everybody's in their chairs listening to what's going on. If you've been to Washington, you know that that's not the case. Diane and I are really glad to be out of Washington. They have plenty of snow there. In 10 days, we got 5 feet of snow. And so I think it'll be May before we get our car out now. But we were able to eventually get out of D.C. and get back to Wyoming where we could talk to real people. And that's what we do most weekends and when we have a recess like right now. We're having a recess, so you might want to know that 99% of the gains in the stock market happen while we're in recess. But it's tough times in Washington, besides the snow. But the president has said that there will be a health conference that'll be televised, and it'll be on next Thursday. And I'm one of the 17 senators that have been invited, and there have been 20 people from the House that have been invited. And I was the first and so far the only Republican senator to say that I'd come to the conference. So I had to get a lot of talking time. But I've been providing ideas on health care for a year, and I'm certain that this time they will listen. I want to particularly thank Charlie Scott for all of the information that he's shared with me and the book that he wrote. But he's a constant contributor to ideas on it. And I want to thank the Wyoming legislature for being kind of a laboratory for health care. You have an opportunity to show us what could be done, and that's without messing up the whole country, just in case it doesn't go right. But I know that by the time you finish the amendment process on everything, that it goes pretty well. What makes it out of the Wyoming legislature is very impressive. I keep track of different legislatures and what they get done, and Wyoming gets as many bills passed as the full-time legislators. And the really impressive part is that the year following that, you have less corrective bills than the full-time legislators. In other words, you pretty much get it right the first time. Now, we're going to go back, and on Monday we'll be voting on a jobs bill. Well, actually, we won't quite be voting on it yet. The way our process works is kind of different. Senator Grassley and Senator Baucus, a Republican and a Democrat, worked out a jobs bill, put it on the Internet, and introduced it. Didn't go to committee, though, but it's a bipartisan bill. But a few minutes after they did that, Leader Reid went to the floor, turned in his own bill, and did some parliamentary maneuvers so that we cannot amend it, and on Monday we'll debate whether to debate it or not. If it gets 60 votes, then we'll spend 30 hours explaining why we ought to debate it, and then we'll have another cloture vote, and if that gets 60 votes, then we'll spend 30 hours probably debating why we weren't able to amend it, and then we'll have a final vote. That takes about 2 weeks. I think that if there were amendments allowed on the bills, and if they went to committee, as you know, committee is the best place to do work because you can have a little bit more flexibility and conversation over any amendment that's being decided on. And it really works that way with the U.S. Senate. When we go to the floor and you take an amendment down there, the amendment is not amendable. It's up or down. Sometimes it takes 2 weeks to vote on an amendment there, too. So I really appreciate the efficiency with which you get your message out, get it said, get it debated, and get it done. It's just really amazing, and you should really be proud of the work that you do here. And that's why Wyoming is in such a good position, because of what you do, not because of what Congress does. I do have a request, and that's on April 17th, I'm going to be having my Inventors Conference again. and I designed that for young people. I wanted it to be a way that they could think about inventing something that could be made in Wyoming and sold all over the world and give them enough money that they could live wherever they wanted to, which I know would be Wyoming. And the conference is a great success. But it's adults that are coming to it. The young people aren't thinking about the kinds of problems that could be solved with the ingenious minds that they have. And I'd really like for them to be involved in that process. I have a second part to it, which is a procurement conference, and we just did that last Wednesday in Laramie. And that's where I bring the federal government to Wyoming to talk to the people that have products. And we get an amazing number of contracts each year. Last year, there were $349 million worth of contracts awarded to Wyoming by the federal government. And all of those went to small businesses, which helps to keep some small businesses in business. But it also gives them a good base to work from with the rest of their customers. And I want to mention one Wyoming product. I always like to boost one. I keep some of the products on my desk in Washington just in case somebody comes in that might be able to purchase some of that. But a guy from Buffalo came up with an idea for how to clean up oil spills. Oil spills that soak into the ground, oil spills that are on top of cement floors or the ground, or oil spills that are on water. And it is the most amazing thing. He's got 27 patents on it and a bunch of tests that have actually been worked in the field that are absolutely amazing. It cleans the whole thing up, and any byproduct from it is in such good shape that it can be put in a landfill. And it's with beetle kill pine. Just to give you an example of how efficient it is, if there's a 15,000-gallon spill, it used to cost $3 million to clean that up. With his product, it takes 118,000 pounds, which costs $178,000, and it will clean it up better than any other method that's out there. You'd be amazed at the Wyoming inventions that are out there. I mean, these are people that, while they're doing their work every day, are thinking, there ought to be a better way to do this. And they come up with a better way to do it. And we have an opportunity to diversify Wyoming with those ideas. So I'd appreciate your help on that, and I just want to thank you for all that you do and the way that you do it and the way that you get it done. It was a pleasure to work here. I learned a lot while I was here. You know, I before I came to the legislature, I lobbied a little bit, and so I thought I knew how the legislature worked. Then I got here, and I found out you had to vote on everything. Not just the dozen bills that you were interested in. So you get a great education every single day, and you do a great job with that education. And I thank you for the opportunity to see you every year and to address you and to see you as I travel around the state. Thank you. I forgot something really important. I'm sorry. I forgot to introduce particularly my wife who's here and my grandson who's here. And you may not have noticed, but he's 6 years old, and this is his sixth time of being here. He takes off from school and comes to visit the legislature when I do, and his mother's here as well. And, well, his dad's here too, but he insists on being up in the balcony. Some kind of rules you have here. So I thank you for letting them come too. Thank you, Mr. President.
I'm going to say, even though I'm an old bachelor, I was going to recognize your wife. That's being very important. Welcome, Diana. Also this morning, we're honored to have Cynthia Lummis, who is no stranger to the Chamber of the Wyoming Legislature and State Government. She served 14 years in both the Wyoming House and Senate before elected to the U.S. House of Representatives in 2008. Representative Lummis is a Capital City native who was born and raised on her family ranch in Cheyenne. In addition to serving the Wyoming legislature, she has also been a clerk at the Wyoming Supreme Court, has practiced law in Cheyenne, and is also she also chaired Governor-elect Jim Geringer transition team. She was elected Wyoming State Treasurer in 1998 and served two terms in that position. In the United States House of Representatives, she served on the Agriculture Committee, Committee on Budget, and Committee on Natural Resources. Please join me in welcoming our representative, Cynthia Lemon.
Well, Mr. President and members of the Senate, it's an honor and a privilege to be with you this morning. I particularly want to acknowledge and send greetings to your wonderful Senate President. He succeeded me as chairman of the House Revenue Committee, where he did a marvelous job and came to the Senate and, of course, has exercised his fair, earnest, sincere, knowledgeable, and effective efforts on behalf of all of Wyoming. Congratulations, Mr. President. I want to acknowledge my state senator, Rick Honeycutt. Thank you for serving our neighborhood in the United States, in the state Senate, and to all of you. This body, having served here for 14 years, is the best model anyone could ever have to serve in the United States Congress. This is a fair, bipartisan, deliberative body where everyone can offer bills. They all go to committee. Everyone who debates is listened to equally. Each party and each member has an opportunity to offer amendments, and you can thoroughly discuss every bill before you vote on them. The United States House is nothing like that. In the United States House, the Speaker can draft a bill behind closed doors, bring it to the floor without amendment for an up or down vote, which is not only inconsiderate to the minority, it's inconsiderate to the rank and file members of the majority party as well, and to the American people. This is a much better system, a much better model. And as a result, I believe, Wyoming presents a much better balanced budget, balanced stewardship of natural resources, and puts Wyoming first rather than party first. So I admire you and applaud your work. I, too, have relied on many of you during the last year to provide me with expertise and information on issues specific to your part of the state or your area of expertise. And I, too, want to comment on how much I appreciate Senator Scott's advice with regard to entitlement programs that are eating into the federal budget in an unsustainable manner. We have spoken about under what conditions Wyoming might be willing to participate in a pilot project to take Medicaid as a block grant, with fewer strings attached so that it might more efficiently administer health care to low-income people and how that might be a model. States are incubators for good ideas, and this state provides the ultimate great incubator because of you. So I want to congratulate you for your fine work, for the wonderful efforts you provide and representing us, for the advice you have provided me as a new member of Congress. And I wish you well, and I want to thank you for your service and say a special greeting to those of you with whom I served in this body. It's usually the old guard over there in the corner, and I see a few in the back here that I served with, and I am grateful that their legacy and your legacy will serve Wyoming well. Thank you, Mr. President, for allowing me this time.
Thank you very much, Cynthia, for joining us today. We're always glad to see you and wish you well in your work. To continue on Senate File 50, we have a standing amendment, number 3. Reading clerk, please read it in.
Senate File 50, third reading amendment number 3, page 2, line 11.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, I move adoption of this amendment. Mr. President, what this amendment does is that it provides that in their bylaws, the hospitals can limit the privileges of anyone's admitted staff based on their scope of practice and the training of that applicant. Mr. President, frankly, I think they can probably do this anyhow. I think that's the current law, but this makes it very clear, and I hope it will help alleviate some of the concerns that some people have had with these privileges. I think the lobby group may not be entirely satisfied. I think there's some concerns there that probably relate more to status than anything else. But this is an attempt to make sure that there aren't problems because that we've some way constrained their authority in ways we didn't intend. This makes it very clear that they can take an individual and limit their practice based on the particular training and credentials that they have. I would urge adoption of the amendment.
Any discussion on the amendment? Not the question is shall third reading amendment number 3 to Senate File 50 pass. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The amendment have passed. Are you ready for the question on the bill? Senate File. Senator Coe.
Reluctantly, I oppose this bill. It's been the one bill that I've had down here that I've seen that I've had heartburn over. And I think we have to think what we're doing here. We are giving full admitting privileges to nurse practitioners. Now, I didn't hear from too many nurses on this bill until last night. I never heard from them at all if we would have considered the bill yesterday. You know, as a physician goes out there and becomes a qualified physician, they spend roughly 7 years of additional schooling. They take one special class called hospital medicine that I found out from a doctor up in Cody. That's a specialized class. I'm very, very concerned about this bill. Not that we don't have concerns in the state of Wyoming about primary care. We do have problems out there with primary care. And these nurse practitioners fill a good part of that void that we have out there. This just isn't the right bill at this time. This is a bill that I think needs an interim study to it. The hospitals need to come to the table and talk about it more. Doctors need to be involved in the process. This bill sneaks in here. And if we pass this bill, I think we're passing a bad bill. So I'd ask you to vote against this bill. The amendments make it a little better, but it's still a bad bill.
Senator Landon.
Thank you, Mr. President. I rise with a little bit of caution and trepidation, having heard three of our representatives back in Washington tip their Stetsons to the tall cowboy from Natrona County. And I have a lot of respect for our chairman of Labor and Health. I just wanted to make it clear to my fellow senators that I had some heartburn with this bill long before anybody in the hall visited with me. And it really boils down to two things. And I agree with the senator from Park County. I think maybe we've helped one of the concerns that I had, which was, are we really tying the hands of our boards? And I really didn't want to do that. I didn't like the fact that this bill takes some prerogative away from our local hospital boards. But the second issue remains, and that is, do you want to throw the door wide open to our licensed practice nurses out there? There's four or five different nursing training programs, at least two of which don't contain hospital privileges. I just still have a little bit of heartburn with this bill, and have had from the word go.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, speaking on and for the bill, this bill has two major advantages to it. One of them is that we are in this state short of health providers of almost all kinds, but particularly primary care providers. And by giving the advanced practice nurses hospital privileges, it does make this a more attractive state for those providers who are in short supply and have lots of options. It makes this a more attractive place to come. That was the primary reason I drew the bill. The second reason is there's quite a mixture of practices around the state. A number of hospitals allow the advanced practice nurses to have privileges. A number of them do not. We had testimony in committee that and I'd had a complaint before I drew the bill from an individual, that when one of those practices has somebody who needs to go to the hospital, the nurse cannot attend. They can visit as you or I would visit, but they cannot attend. They don't have access to the information, to the charts, to what's going on. And that's a real disadvantage, Mr. President, when you're trying to coordinate the care with what happens after the individual gets out of the hospital and they're back under the care of this advanced practice nurse, which is their primary caregiver. The other problem is that in three of those four practices, there isn't a doctor associated with the practice. So when they have a patient that needs to be admitted, the patient has to be referred to the emergency room and comes in through that route. And that's a very expensive way to do things. We did have testimony that particularly the older advanced practice nurses, don't have the necessary training. And that's one of the things that gives rise to the amendment we just passed. So they can have their scope limited, and the hospital can say they don't have the training necessary. I think we've taken care of that. But the younger ones do have the training. So I think we need to move forward with this. I know there are some concerns. I think some of the concerns are status concerns of the various professions. I don't know how we're going to ever solve that problem. I would urge us to pass the bill. I think it will improve the health care of the citizens of Wyoming.
Are you ready for the question?
Aye, sir.
Senate File 50 have been read three separate times. The question is, shall the bill pass? The chief clerk will call the roll.
Anderson?
No.
Bebout?
No.
Burns?
No.
Case?
Aye.
Coe?
No.
Cooper?
Aye.
Dockstader?
No.
Elliott?
Aye.
Esquibel?
Aye.
Geis?
No.
Hastert?
Aye.
Honeycutt?
Aye.
Jennings?
Aye.
Johnson?
Aye.
Landon?
No.
Larson?
Aye.
Martin?
Aye.
Massey?
Aye.
Meyer?
Aye.
Meyer-S?
No.
Nicholas?
No.
Perkins?
No.
Peterson?
No.
Ross?
No.
Schiffer?
Aye.
Scott?
Aye.
Sessions?
Aye.
Townsend?
No.
Bonflatern?
No.
President Hines?
No.
Closing vote? Closing. Jennings, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 14 ayes, 16 noes.
Senate File 50 having failed to receive the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Senate. Senate file 50 have failed to pass the Senate. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, we are at that order of business. Considerations of bills on general file.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move that the Senate resolve itself into the Committee of the Whole.
You've heard the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion carried. Senator Burns.
Committee of the Whole, please come to order. The first bill to come before us is the Senate File 68. The reading clerk will read the Senate file.
Senate File 68, sponsored by Senator Ross, Supreme Court Peace Officers, an act relating to peace officers. It was referred to Committee No. 1 Judiciary. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Burns, Esmeyer, Ross, Sessions, Perkins, Senator Perkins excused, Senator Ross, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure, Senator Ross?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rise and report it, do so with a do pass recommendation on Senate File 68, Supreme Court Peace Officer. There is a standing committee amendment, and I'd ask that it be read in at this time.
Senate File 68, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 2, line 24.
Mr. Chairman, I move Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, and we'll discuss it with the bill. This was an interim topic of Joint Judiciary interim topic bill. Started as a House bill and died in the House over apparently the fear that the Wyoming Supreme Court would be out creating its own police force, which is entirely not, is definitely not true. So fortunately I had a slot open, and we redid the bill, made it a little bit more succinct. And here's the situation that we have. Supreme Court is part of our capital complex, and as with any other court, there are security needs for the court. Now, our district courts and circuit courts and so forth have the county sheriffs available to them. But here, the Supreme Court had come to the governor to see if we could have a highway patrolman serve as their court security officer, and was told, go find your own. So that's what they did. And they hired a former representative who is a peace officer, post-trained the whole nine yards, to serve as the court security officer. So what this bill does is try to allow the Supreme Court to have some safety, to have a security officer, and then we've limited those duties or the scope with which the peace officer can act. And that is in on page 2 and 3, which says, first of all, it's a duly authorized court security officer who's employed by the Supreme Court and who is qualified under 9-1-701 through 707, which is peace officer. But then on Romanet 2, 1, 2, and then with the Standing Committee Amendment Number 3, we set out scope of his authority. Enforcing the statutes or the Supreme Court rules on the premises of the Supreme Court. If there is a crime, if they're in fresh pursuit, and have probable cause to believe a crime has been committed within the officer's jurisdiction, and when responding, this is the Standing Committee Amendment, and when responding
to a request to assist other officers acting within the scope of their official duties in their own jurisdiction. If there was some sort of attack or some sort of threat at the Capitol, he could help and assist and respond. So that's what this bill does. It allows them that authority. It doesn't change the retirement system. It doesn't change anything. It just allows the Supreme Court to have a peace officer, a designated peace officer, serve as security for the Supreme Court. And I urge your favorable adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment and the bill.
Any discussion on the amendment? Hearing none. Question being called. All those in favor of Senator Ross's motion to adopt Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 68, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? I'm sorry, Senate File 68. Please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 68 has passed. We're back on the bill. Any further questions or discussion? Question being called. All those in favor of Senator Ross's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rise to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 68, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 68 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill up for our consideration is Senate File 67. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 67, sponsored by Senator Ross, Pharmacy Benefits Management, an act relating to health insurance. It was referred to Committee Number 7, Corporation Elections and Political Subdivisions. It reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senator Cooper, Hester, Johnson, Scott, no, Senator Case, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure? Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Senate, the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a due pass recommendation on Senate File 67, Pharmacy Benefits Management. There is no Standing Committee amendments. I would yield to the bill's sponsor, Senator Ross.
Senator Ross.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I bring to you, members of the Senate, Pharmacy Benefit Management Bill, Senate File 67. What this bill is a transparency bill. And you should have received a cream-colored document on your desk that has a little diagram on it. And that's a pretty good way of thinking about pharmacy benefit managers. Essentially, what you have is in the middle of this paradigm, you have a pharmacy benefit management company. And they do several things. Their job can be to assist insurers with their pharmacy costs and so forth. But they deal basically with three different entities. They deal with, first of all, they deal with pharmacies themselves. They determine how much pharmacies will be paid. They deal with covered entities, the insurers or other plans, particularly through self-employment or employer plans. Or other kinds of plans, private insurance, private employer. That's the covered entity. That's the insurance company. They deal with them. They decide what the cost is that the insurance company will pay them for their cost of drugs. Plus, they can have a fee for their services. On the other end of that spectrum, they deal with the drug manufacturers. They negotiate contracts with the drug manufacturers for the pharmaceuticals. They negotiate the amounts of discounts and rebates with the drug manufacturers. And all of this is being done, separate and apart, without any transparency to the end game users, the consumer. So what this bill does is say, we want transparency. We want to know what it is that the left hand is doing versus the right hand. And how do we structure that? This bill structures it as follows. We first, on page 2 of the bill, require that a pharmacy benefit management company, the PBMs as they're called, register with the insurance commissioner's office. And they have to do that on a yearly basis, and they will comply with the rules as promulgated by the insurance department, and they will pay a fee that is established to ensure that the total revenue generated from the fees approximates the cost of doing it. The insurance commissioner's office has estimated that to be around $100 a year. So they register with the insurance commissioner's office and they collect those fees. 26-3-502, we enter into definitions. We define what a covered entity is. And you'll see that in Romanet I in the middle of page 3. That's, in essence, the insurance company. We also define the covered individual as being, in essence, the policy holder. We define pharmacy benefit management and what that means and what a pharmacy benefit manager is on page 4. We then go and start on 26.3.503. We set out the duties of the pharmacy benefit manager. They're to perform their duties with exercising good faith and fair dealing. That's not an onerous thing, folks. That is what is expected in all contracts, that you would operate in good faith and fair dealing. They are to notify the covered entity of the availability of simply administrative service contracts only. There are those that are out there. In fact, our Wyoming Medicaid uses a PBM simply for claims. Wyoming Medicaid, with the state pharmacists and the employees there, determine which drugs are out, will be used, the formulary, all of that kind of stuff. For most insurance companies, though, they don't have the time or they don't have the employees to do that, and they leave that all up to the PBM. They have to disclose the financial terms and arrangements. And what is key to this bill is lines 12 through the bottom, through line 22. The pharmacy benefit managers disclosing information under this paragraph may designate it. They don't have to, but they can. And if they designate that material as confidential, that information is confidential and is only disclosed to the covered entity, and it is not available to the public. And it can't be disclosed without the consent of the pharmacy benefit managers. They disclose agreements to sell prescription data, including data concerning prescribing practices of the healthcare providers in this state. I will tell you that in my discussions with the Wyoming Medical Society, they approve of this. They've got to disclose whether or not they're substituting drugs. And it was an eye-opening experience in the Labor Committee to hear our state pharmacist really describe how complicated pharmaceutical is. I mean, it is amazing. to talk about the switching of drugs or the repackaging of pharmaceuticals, where one might actually think, and they think they're getting a really good price because it comes in lots of, let's say, 10,000. But yet when it comes, the PBMs, they actually repackage it and sell it in lots of 40, and the price goes up. So, all we're telling them is, look, disclose what's going on. The naysayers of the bill will tell you, well, they can already do that, and that is already part of contractual arrangements, and that's part of the business of doing business, part of the free market. It may very well be. But the fact of the matter is that in Wyoming, we are such a small purchaser. Our people are such a small fish in such a large lake that we don't have a lot of that buying power that you may find in the Floridas or the Illinois of the world. What we do then also is provide for a penalty if there's a failure to comply. And that is already in our statutes in the insurance code. It's a misdemeanor for per event, $1,000, 6 months. There is a provision in the insurance code for civil penalties, and I'm trying not to look at the good senator from Laramie. Civil penalties for $2,500 for each offense, or an aggregate total of $25,000 aggregate. Folks, this is an important bill, not only for the people of the state of Wyoming, but it is an important bill for the independent pharmacists in this state. They're going out. Casper just lost their independent pharmacy. One of the other things I didn't mention about this bill is I've been fighting this for a while. Is that the pharmacy benefit manager shall not require a covered individual to have to purchase his pharmaceuticals by mail. Very important key of this. And the testimony in committee from pharmacists, independent pharmacists, they're the frontline people. Half the time, the pharmaceuticals don't arrive on time. They have to come to the pharmacy to try to get their medicines. And more often than not, the reality is that they are cheaper. So what I'd urge you to do is to pass this bill, move it on, and let me sit down before I really start laughing.
Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I was the only no vote in committee. I guess I do have questions about this bill. I think we should clear one thing up about this, the state pharmacist. It was my impression from her testimony that she was not taking a position on the bill. I think, yeah, and I don't believe that the good sponsor meant to give that impression. She did absolutely talk about how complicated the drug world is and the repackaging and how mail order pharmacies sometimes can, buy drugs in huge lots and then repackage them in smaller dosages. And a lot has to do with dosages, apparently, because sometimes these pharmacy benefit, the insurance companies basically will say, well, you got to have it right away, so go to your local pharmacy, and they'll give you a two-week supply, and then the refills come through the mail. So that kind of cuts the local pharmacies out of the refill deal. That is a fair issue, and that really does hurt our local pharmacies. And it is about local pharmacy. I think a lot of this applies. But I think I just would be remiss if I didn't talk about this fiscal note that's on this bill. And I think the members of the Appropriations Committee ought to dig in here and dig in here hard, because I really believe that this is really misleading. The fiscal note purports to tell you how much money could be saved
with our employee insurance program. And it's an extraordinary amount of money. And if you look, it says $865,000 per year. Now, here's the issue, Mr. Chairman. They can have a pharmacy benefit manager right now to do that. They could negotiate that right now. They're the biggest cat in the field, and they could achieve these savings if they existed. And they, you know, so I say, well, if there's this much money on the table, why haven't they been doing their job already? Because they're the ones negotiating with the people that manage our plan. The other aspect of the fiscal note, there are two individuals on this fiscal note, one who is with the Department of Insurance and one with the Employees Insurance Program. The gentleman that was with the Department of Insurance testified about how the $1,500 expense was derived based on registering 15 pharmacy benefit managers at $100 apiece. The big number, no one was there to testify on that big number. No one can say where that number comes from. So I have this funny thing. Here we're passing a bill that's supposed to help people of Wyoming, and it seems to just help our employee insurance program do something that they should have done already. And we ought to be asking questions about that.
Further discussion, Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, speaking on and for the bill, yes, we should have, the employee insurance should have been getting these savings. There are a limited number of these PBMs, and there are some out there that claim to have transparency. I'm not sure I would immediately discount that we're going to get some additional savings by passing this bill if our state employees insurance manager has better information. It'll certainly give him a wider field of, and make all the PBMs transparent and give him a wider field to select from. And that has a value as well. The pricing of prescription drugs is fearful and wonderful. You heard the sponsor of the bill talk about what the state pharmacist said on that subject, and she was giving us a much simplified version of what the real world is. It's complicated. There have been great efforts to keep transparency out of the marketplace so the marketplace won't function the way it might. And the reason, I think, is fundamental to pharmacy business. Your costs are mostly upfront costs. R&D, regulatory approval being the big ones. And then the advertising cost. And those are lump sum costs. And then your actual manufacturing costs are relatively low. And there's the opportunity for some real price competition and for getting discounts on the drugs. And there's opportunity for competition because if you know what the prices are, there's a lot of Me Too drugs on the market that do pretty much the same thing. And you can get some very real savings if you can find out what the prices really are. And I think that you'll see savings passed on to people, particularly with private insurance, if this bill passes and the insurance company can get better information out of their PBMs as to exactly what's going on. So the other feature that I think that is very important, there was testimony in committee which wasn't mentioned, that if the PBM says, well, if you're going to get, then strike a deal with the insurance company. If you're going to get your drugs covered, you have to buy it through them. Drugs, which most of your pills have, they get a little hot or a little cold in the mail, doesn't make much difference. But there's a number that it does make a big difference for. We had a retired endocrinologist from Cheyenne that came and testified and warn specifically against buying insulin, mail order, that it could very well get too hot or too cold and be degraded, and he said it'd be just like using water. And I believe that. As the Senate knows, I'm diabetic myself. I use insulin. And I will not get that through our PBM because I'm afraid of exactly that thing. I get it through a local pharmacy. Now it's a chain store because we've lost the independence. But still, it's a local pharmacy, and I'm much more confident. So that's an important provision as well. Real problem in this area with the market not functioning very well because there is not price transparency. And I think this bill will help the market and help the private sector.
Further discussion? Senator Jennings.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Whenever we talk about transparency, we're usually talking about transparency in government. And this bill is one of the hardest ones that I have read this year to try to decide where I'm going to vote, and I'm not sure where I am. But transparency in government is a good thing. Open the doors, see what we do and how we do it. But transparency in private business is a whole different story. And I thought I had convinced myself that that was the reason that I was a no vote on this. But the other day at breakfast, I sat with a surgeon anesthesiologist from Cheyenne, and we were talking about this bill, and he talked about how he actually did call a drug company and ask for samples of a drug, and he said, "I'll buy them. I don't want them. Just give them to him." He paid 8 cents a pill for them, but yet when he goes to the pharmacy to buy them, he pays $8 for them. So then all of a sudden I'm over here on this bill and say, well, the heck with the transparency and the government and all that and getting your private business. But, you know, setting all that aside, if the sponsor would go a little bit more into depth and you said that there were some voluntary things, well, you didn't say voluntary, you said they didn't have to disclose this, they didn't want to. But then you went into talking about how there was penalties. So I'm a little confused on if there's things that you don't have to disclose, then I'm missing what exactly we're going to be penalized for.
Senator Ross.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First of all, this bill will require the pharmacy benefit manager to disclose the contents that are in this bill, price, all those kinds of things, to the covered entity. It requires them to make that disclosure. What I said, though, was that can be deemed confidential by the pharmacy benefit manager, can only be disclosed to the covered entity, and it's not open for the rest of the world to see. It's confidential. So hopefully I've answered your question there. I think that's about as far as I need to go with answering that one.
Further discussion? Question being called. All those in favor of Senator Case's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation for Senate File 67, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 67, being the final Senate file of the 60th Legislature, has passed Committee of the Whole. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, may I have that privilege on the floor?
Of course.
First of all, I want to congratulate you on facing the final bit of fire. I think that's a milestone. Our halftime is approaching, so we'll make some appropriate motions in a minute. Mr. Chairman, I'd like to just take a moment. Perhaps you've seen some youngsters up here that I've seen people in the aisles and things like that.
I would like to introduce my son, his wife, and my four grandchildren. So if Matt, if you would stand, this is my son, Matt. Matt's been watching a lot of our medical and pharmacy debate with great interest. He doesn't practice in Wyoming, but he does practice in another state. Daughter-in-law, Stacy, I think you heard her sing last year, but we're very proud of her. And then the best, I guess, the four little ones, Beth, the taller of the bunch, and then there's Brad, He's going to be Grandpa's basketball player, I think. And then there's Blythe right by Brad. And then in the back is Courtney. And not to forget another partner in this endeavor, my wife, Pam. So if you would, you please. I know Mike Angelin is telling me to do that by amendment.
Welcome to the Senate.
And further, Mr. Chairman, I think just for the Dickens, for the heck of it, I think we're going to do one House bill to show them that our intentions are good, and then we'll make another amendment. So if you would, we'll do one more bill.
One more bill it is.
That's up to you.
Next bill up before the Committee of the Whole is House Bill 48. The reading clerk will read the House Bill.
House Bill 48, sponsored by the Education Committee, School Finance Audits Amendments, an act relating to school finance audits. It was referred to Committee Number 4, Education, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Coe, Jennings, Massey, Session, Von Flatern, Senator Coe, Chairman.
Hey, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, that's it. You've heard the reading of the House bill. What's your pleasure? Senator Coe.
Mr. Chairman, I move in the Committee of the Whole Rise and Report to do so with a do pass recommendation on House Bill 48. This is a joint committee bill from the interim, and I would defer to Senator Sessions for an explanation of the bill.
Senator Sessions.
Mr. Chairman, this bill came to us from the Public Funds Division of the Audit Division. And what it is, and I'll give you a little bit of the history of it really fast and tell you why they would like this one change in it. In 2003, WS 911 was, I better put my glasses on here, WS 91513B little IX was enacted requiring the Department of Audit to conduct audits of vocational education submitted for funding at least once every 3 years. And then 3 years ago, WDOE implemented an element-focused audit of all school districts annually. So now the auditing unit that we approved and funded goes to all districts annually. The focused audit provides more timely information on high-risk funding elements to the legislature. School districts and the Wyoming Department of Education, every school district gets a complete audit which includes the vocational education element over 5 years. HB 48 will repeal the requirement to audit vocational education every 3 years and give the Wyoming Department of Audit the ability to audit elements which may need more focus. And what has happened is once, I guess there is a comfort level now with that, with the vocational auditing after doing it once every 3 years. Things are starting to work and people are getting into the swing of all of this auditing. But with this bill, they came to the Education Committee asking for more leeway. There are other areas of problems that they pick up over the years, and they would like to be able to focus on those areas as they come up. And vocational education will be audited along with everything else in the school district regularly also. So that's what this will do. It will just allow them more leeway to zero in on those problem areas that are popping up every once in a while, and it's not leaving out vocational education. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Further discussion on the bill? Hearing none. All those in favor of Senator Coe's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation for House Bill 40, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 40 has passed Committee of the Whole. Did I say 40? Oh, I'm sorry. I meant 48. House Bill 48 has passed Committee of the Whole. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Chairman. I move that the committee of the whole rise.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
Reading clerk will read the committee of the whole report.
Mr. President, your committee of the whole, having had under consideration bills on general file, begs leave to report as follows. Senate File 68, do pass amended. Senate File 67, do pass. And then House Bill 48, do pass. Senator Burns, Chairman.
Senator Burns.
Mr. President, I move the committee of the whole report.
You've heard the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion carried. Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. President. I may have the privilege of the floor.
You may.
Folks, I thought we've handed some materials out for you to begin looking at over the weekend before you go into the begin Monday on the budget. What I thought I would do is take you quickly through the goldenrod. If you pull out your goldenrod that was in your red folder, unless you've already taken it out this morning, take you through just some of the things to pay attention to. The one that I'm looking at is the one that is the February 19th, 2010. So it's today's goldenrod. Couple things just to watch what's going in for help tomorrow, or I guess it'd be Monday. When you look at the front page, you'll see that we have continued as part of the Joint Appropriations recommendation the sweep out of the general fund down to the statutory reserve into the school foundation, until the LSRA. So when you look at the traditional funds available for appropriations, that would be the bottom of the top table, you'll see that we draw down our account to zero. The way it gets to zero is that transfer. So if you go up about midway through under expenditures, you'll see the 2010 budget bill BRA appropriations of $20,422,000. That's really the balance of the budget reserve general fund above the statutory reserve. Here, the statutory reserve is the 5%, you remember, and that's about $93 million. So anything above that gets swept down into the LSRA. So when you see in the governor's rec, he has a balance of $15 million, and you measure that against the zero, what you really ought to be measuring is the $15 million against the $20 million, because the $20 million is going sweeping into the LSRA. When you go down and look at the school foundation program balance of $100 million versus $40 million, you'll recall that as part of our accounting system, or actually our fund balances, we have previously provided that at the end of the biennium that the school foundation program balance account not fall below $100 million. We've actually, for policies reasons, lowered that to $40 million. We'll talk about that on Monday, why we recommended that. You turn over to page 2. Now you're looking at the general fund. And the bills on file and you'll remember that when a bill goes through general file with an appropriation, it begins the accounting process where it's profiled. So you'll see House Bill 17-1872 and House Joint Resolution 4 all profiled. On the Senate side, you'll see Senate Files 2, 748, 66, and 72 all profiled in those accounts. Turning over to the budget reserve account on page 3, once again, you'll see the profiles. Now, pay attention, too, about under the appropriations, you see a $20 million number. And that is the excess over the required reserve, the $20 million, and you'll see that drops down into the Legislative Stabilization Reserve account down below. That really is the, right now, that would be the surplus above all dollars that we've expended that's moved into the LSRA if we held our present profile today. As you're going into next week, what you're really talking about is $20 million. You spend more than $20 million, you're negative. All right. So then you go to next page on the school foundation program account, and we'll spend some more time on this on Monday. It's just some things to pay attention to. I'm not certain that we accomplish what we want or the best way to do it, but we are, when we begin to look at these two accounts, the school CAPCON account and the school foundation program account, we have stopped the sweeps for 2 years. For those of you that are new, we'll talk about the sweeps, but in generally we have some sweeping clauses that sweep surpluses back into either the permanent mineral trust fund or the common school permanent land fund, two of the permanent accounts out there. We've stopped those sweeps and we've held money. So on the top you'll see that there's a transfer of about $112 million going down into the school CAPCON account from the school foundation program account. Actually, that's part of the CAPCON requirements. Midway, you'll see that the governor suspended about $22 million. This would be his recommendation for the retiree obligation. We've reprofiled that under the Centifile 72. So you're going to measure, you'd measure the 22.9 against the 23 there to measure our position versus the governor's position. You move down to the school CAPCON account, and you can see the difference between the appropriations made recommended by the governor. He was recommending appropriations of about $175 million. The JAC was a smaller recommendation, closer to $112 million. You have a zero balance the way that the JAC recommended. So you can see that the school foundation program is taken down to $40 million, and the school CAPCON account is taken to zero. But you create a new account that's over on page 5 at the bottom, and where all those sweeps ended up is you ended up in the what we call the Common School Permanent Land Fund holding account. So you've got a balance there of $106 million. After an appropriation, there is an automatic appropriation to the corpus of $72 million. But ultimately, we stopped a bunch of the sweeps, put them in a holding account for this biennium at $106 million to make sure that the money stays with us through the biennium. We'll talk about that more next week. On the spending policy reserve accounts above, you can see that, for example, on the spending policy reserve account, there was a $54 million sweep that was taken place. That is part of the 50% of the 1% statutory reserve. Some of that is swept. Some of it is being deferred, and some of it is being allocated. $20 million got paid, we're allocating for payment to the cities, towns, and counties. So once again, we'll talk about this next week. On the last page, you're going to see the three water accounts, and you'll see that the House bill incentive files are profiled against those, including the Gillette Madison water account out of appropriations number 3. With respect to the handout you have, this is the legal size handout. The first four pages are what we traditionally call the cheat sheet. If you go down agency by agency, you can see generally a summary of the actions that were taken by the Joint Appropriations Committee and the governor to the various accounts. So we'll be going over the cheat sheet or using that as a guide as we go through the budget on Monday. But if you want to sit down and look at an agency, you generally can see those recommendations. Page 5 is for those of you, some of you have already seen it. Page 5 is the appropriations from the general fund, the reserve accounts on an ongoing category, broken into categories 1 through 8. And folks, what you can see there is that, no matter how you look at it, it's still a growing budget. It's not, even with the 10% cuts, it's still a growing budget. And as you begin to look at these, what you're wanting to do, where you're wanting to go, just remember those issues. Then over on page 6, I may have showed some of you folks these, but this is an interesting chart. And what's interesting about it is that if you look at the revenue streak, which is the top line, so you have the revenue being the top line of the chart, then you look at our total expenditures, which are the by category. Now, these total expenditures by categories are the same expenditures, the numbers that we saw over on page 5. But you'll see that we had record revenues in the 2007-2008 biennium. And the reason that when you have that high revenue chart above our expenditures, that means to the extent that you did not spend all the revenues that they're actually received, you had carryover one-time surpluses. And when you get into the 09-10 biennium that we're presently in, you could see that the expenditures during the biennium exceed what is the revenues. So you get this area that between the triangle that I'm just putting purple on here, this purple area, those are revenues. That you can see the revenues fell below our actual expenditures. And the reason we were able to accomplish that is because we had carryover surpluses. You can do that once, but you can't do it twice. And if you look at where the graph line ends, you could still see a couple things. One is, as I pointed out before, if you draw a line over that, we're probably at 2005-2006 revenue levels, which ain't all that bad. It's not terrible. At the same time, we don't know where that graph line is going to go, whether it's going to table out or whether it's going to flatten out or going down. We still have revenues over our general expenditures, but it's time to be cautious. It's an interesting chart that everybody needs to pay attention to. Over on page 7 is the LSO's account of the differences for the revenues that we provided to local governments since the time of de-earmarking. It's sort of an ongoing tally sheet to show what they would have received before de-earmarking and what we received after de-earmarking, just if you want to go back and see how communities done. You know, one of the things that happens is that if the notion is that every dollar above the $200 million ought to be shared equally, it can't work that way. Because if you take the $200 million threshold and you take the above dollars, there's a certain amount that we need to have a higher percentage of just to operate our budget, because we can't operate our budget at that level. But the higher the surpluses come, the greater of each and every dollar that goes to city, county. So it's not an even thing. You can't take, if you're sitting there and it costs your family $1,000 a month to live, and you bring in $1,000 a month to live, then you have nothing to share. If you get in another $300, the first $300, you may say, well, I'm going to put some here, I'm going to give the kids some. But as you get more and more surplus, then as each dollar that comes in, you give a higher percentage for other causes. In this case, would be the cities, towns, and counties. So they got a higher percentage of the dollars as we went up. And as we came down, we have to give them a lower percentage. And I'll try to do a better job of explaining that next week. Then if you go to the next two, 9 and 10 are diagrams. If I were you, I wouldn't look at them. They'll just give you a headache. I thought they would be helpful, but it's when we start talking about these reserves and the SPRAW accounts and what we've done, the gist of what we've done, folks, is we've suspended most of the trips into the permanent land fund and the common school land account for 2 years, just to make sure where we're going. Page 11 is Senator Massey's outline of how the school maintenance and CAPCON process works, from the evaluation phase to the needs index stage to the capital construction process to the legislative role. You need to know that. You need to take a look at that, because when we get in, one of the major components that we're going to be talking about next week is school capital construction. And it's important, because the issue is, do we spend all of our money? Do we hold some back? And when you get to learn more about how school facilities are being funded, if you're like me, you'll get frustrated, and there's no perfect answer. If you turn over to page 12, you'll look at the difference between on the schools. The select committee on the CapCon, or school capital construction, their recommendation, where they recommended total expenditures of about $82 million for CapCon, and when you add in the component level projects, they were about $175. Then you go to the governor's rec, and the governor said, let's spend more money, and he recommended on capital construction $162 million. And we'll show you that when you spend $162 million, if you look at a 4 to 5 year profile, you spend it down to pretty much zero. You got to better make sure that we hope like heck we get more revenues. But in doing that, he was able to fund all the capital construction projects that you see in the middle paragraphs. And folks, in a nutshell, part of what's happening is that we rank schools in order of need. The planning process for all the schools is not progressing at the same speed for all the schools as the ranking is. So there are lower-ranked schools ready, teed up to go out and could start construction tomorrow, but some of the higher-ranking schools are not ready to go. And, in fact, some of the higher-ranking schools are set in phases, phase one, phase two, and phase three. And the Facilities Commission has been saying, okay, we'll fund phase one, but since you don't need as phase one might be $10 million. All the phases might be $30 million. But the Facilities Commission is saying, well, since we're only going to allocate $10 million to phase three, and we're going to take the other $20 million and allocate it to lower priority projects because they're ready to go. Well, if you never had another dollar, then you're funding a lower priority school at the expense of a higher priority phase that you're not funding. And some of the schools have got caught in that, where they got phase one funded, they're ready to go to phase two and phase three, but the money's not there. And we're going to get to debate it next week on what the best approach is. But believe me, it's not easy, and it's not as easy as just saying, look, you ought to be spending as much as me, because not only is how much you spend, but where you spend it. If you look at the third column, Joint Appropriations Committee, we trimmed back the obligation, and we held out about $48 million. And we trimmed off a couple of the projects. But then we said, look, there's a lot of rollover money that exists in the school CapCon. We've put billions in there. And to the extent that projects are completed for less than what is required, if there is a surplus that's created from the rollover dollars that are being managed by the school facilities folks, if surpluses occur, then you can apply them to the projects in the lower boxes on page 12. And those lower projects on page 12, some of those are their lower priority projects. But some of them are planned and geared up to go. If you gave them the money, they could build today, whereas you go up to the higher priorities, there are a few up there that can't spend the money right now because they haven't finished their planning. And you ask why. Part of my suspicion is that when a school finds that they are now up in the top one and they're ready to go and they know they're entitled to it, they're not quite as cooperative. Their planning goes slower. They need more money because they're in the priority. Some of the people on the lower ranks, they know that they can't get up. They're hungry. And they're cooperative. They'll go out and plan. They'll get their schools right where they need to be on size. And they're ready to rock and roll. So do you want to, maybe we ought to reward those people. And there are contractors hungry out there to take advantage of these contracts right now today. And if we only fund the ones on the top, those contractors are looking for work. Some of that work's not ready to go. And there's just no perfect answer, but that is a highlight of what you're going to get next week. We'll talk about how the amendments work and make recommendations to you. The last sheets, well, actually, I should point out page 13. Page 13 profiles the governor's versus the JAC recommendations, and it profiles the school foundation program account and the school CAPCON accounts together. And you can see how we'll work through those together. But in the end, you got to look at where your ending balances are, where they're negatives, and look at those bottom lines. And folks, we got to watch these accounts. The Constitution provides that this is the first account. This is the most important obligation. And for those of us that were here years ago, you know that it's no fun when the first thing you have to fund out of your general fund are school capital construction and or school foundation program account. So we're very cautious looking at these numbers to try to keep them positive. And when you begin to look out at the out years, you can see that you do see negatives. It's concerning, and how we manage those accounts we'll be talking about next week. Paragraphs, or then you start getting into the page 14 and the end. Those are the distributions, the local governments, the way the funding model presently provides for local governments. And that is the way the model that the JAC worked out, which is the same model recommended by the Select Committee on Local Government Financing, is the exact same model that came out of the House and Senate last year. So that model, no changes. It's just taking the same model that we used from the last general budget, and we used that and applied it. That's just a highlight of things to look at over the weekend, and have a great weekend. We'll see you next week.
Senator Bebout.
Mr. President, would you rather we not ask questions and wait till next week as we get into this?
I think we'll have plenty of time for questions next week.
Okay.
We do have messages from the House.
February the 19th, 2010, from the House of Representatives, message 144. Third reading passed. Mr. President, the bills listed below passed the House on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill 20, Criminal Street Gangs. Ayes 47, noes 11, excused 2. February the 19th, 2010, from the House of Representatives, third reading passed, amended. Mr. President, the bills listed below passed the House on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. House Bill 15, Electrical Safety and Fire Prevention Revisions. Ayes 52, noes 5, excused 2, conflict 1. House Bill 18, Aquatic Invasive Species 2, ayes 47, noes 11, excused 2. House Bill 61, Legal Services Funding, ayes 49, noes 9, excused 2. House Bill 67, Data Processing Center Sales Use Tax Exemption, ayes 55, noes 3, excused 2. And House Bill 109, Compulsory School Attendance 3, ayes 49, noes 9, excused 2. Patricia Benson, House Chief Clerk.
Standing Committee reports.
February the 19th, 2010, Mr. President, your Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, to whom was referred House Bill 26, engrossed, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. I, Senator Hastert, Honeycutt, Landon, Schiffer, and Scott, Senator Scott, Chairman. February the 19th, 2010, Mr. President, your Committee Number 1, Judiciary, to whom was referred House Bill 12, engrossed, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Burns, Esmeyer, Perkins, Ross, and Sessions, Senator Ross, Chairman. February the 19th, 2010, Mr. President, your committee number one, Judiciary, to whom was referred House Bill 13, engrossed, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, S. Meyer, Perkins, Ross, and Sessions, Senator Ross, Chairman. February the 19th, 2010, Mr. President, your committee number one, Judiciary, to whom was referred House Bill 4, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, S. Meyer, Perkins, Ross, and Sessions, Senator Ross, Chairman.
Mr. Majority Floor Leaders, that clears the desk.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move that the Senate be adjourned until 10 a.m. Monday, February 22nd. And Mr. President, I do have an announcement.
Go ahead.
Members of the body, you have on your desk a copy of the governor's appointments. What we'd like for you to do is to take this appointment list home with you or wherever and look through that. At this point, we haven't scheduled any kind of a caucus. But if you look through the, would look over this during the weekend, and if you have concerns or have something that you'd like to discuss and further, if you would talk to the president or I or the vice president, we'll make the appropriate arrangement to give us the discussion that you feel is necessary. Committee chairs, it's for your review as well, and you can make your choices as to how you might want to interview appointees and that. Having said that, I think that's the only comment I have other than that the road report is posted out here on the glass. And I would just say, in regard to this last week's, 2 weeks' activities, is very, very well done.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, will meet Monday morning at 8 a.m. in the regular committee room to discuss House Bill 25, Child Care Development Fund.
Senator Coe.
Hey, Mr. President, I've been asked to announce that the Wyoming Department of Education and the Wyoming Department of Environmental Quality will have out front, for those that would like to walk through it, Wyoming's first hybrid electric diesel school bus. I don't think they'll let you drive it. I know they won't let Senator Larson drive it. And they're having a press conference at 1:30, but it's right out here on 24th Street, if you'd like to look at it.
Senator Ross.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your committee number one, Judiciary, will meet at 8 a.m. on Monday morning to consider the following House bills. House Bill 17, Engrossed Carbon Sequestration, Financial Assurances and Regulation, and House Bill 66, Engrossed Governmental Claims Act Process.
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. President. For JAC members, there's an updated list of your assignments for Monday. It's the same as the last list, but if you haven't seen it, you might want to pick it up from Don in our offices. For the rest of you folks, remember, we begin the budget on Monday. If you want to refresh yourself of the rules for the mayor budget bills, you'll see it on page 71 of your joint rules. But joint rule provides that it shall be out of order to propose an amendment to a mayor bill during the committee of the whole, considering the first house. Purpose of that is so we can get the explanations and get the bill moving more quickly. There will be some amendments on the committee of the whole, just that are technical issues that were found by the staff during the wrap-up or during the review process. Then with respect to second and third reading, the rule M2 provides that you need to have your amendments to the legislative staff for preparation not later than 5 p.m. on the legislative working day preceding the day of the reading. And you'll recall then that we have the previous day, or we have an off day in between, so you could do committee of the whole, we'll do second reading, then there'll be a day off, and then the final reading, and
So if you take a look at those rules, but the biggest thing to remember is if you've got amendments that you want to run on Tuesday, get them to the staff early on Monday. It helps the staff and gets everything put out. Thank you.
Senator Landon.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your committee number 8, Transportation, will meet 10 minutes after adjournment on Monday, room S13, to consider the following bills. House Bill 24, Insurance Requirements for Newly Purchased Vehicles. House Bill 84, Engrossed Gold Star License Plates. And House Bill 27, Armed Forces License Plate Fees and Distribution.
You have heard the motion that the Senate shall be adjourned until 10 a.m. Monday, February 22nd. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate is adjourned.